Today on Two Ladies Just Talking About Mental Health, we have our first guest, Char's best friend, Allie.
Yay! Allie generously sat down with us to talk to us about her mental health journey. She's brilliant and vulnerable and offers some great tips. The conversation's also a powerful reminder that everyone has a story. We just need to take time to ask and listen.
So join us. We're two ladies just talking about mental health.
Go.
Hi, I'm Joss.
And I'm Char.
And together, we're two ladies just talking about mental health.
We come from very different backgrounds, race, family, religion, but we share one major thing in common. We both have tendencies towards anxiety and depression.
And while we don't have any mental health degrees or credentials, we do consider ourselves experts in our own mental health journeys because we live it daily.
Together, we'll share some tips, stories, and interview mental health experts and guests with lived experiences.
Because we believe that sharing stories is key to destigmatizing mental health and feeling less alone.
Join us. We're two ladies just talking about mental health.
Go.
Hi, listeners. I'm Joss from Two Ladies Just Talking About Mental Health with Joss and Char. If you're experiencing a mental health emergency or crisis, please remember these three numbers, 988. By calling or texting 988, you can speak with or chat with a mental health professional who can help you. Someone's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You don't have to suffer alone, and help is just 3 digits away. So write this down, 988. And if you don't have access to a phone, please go to your nearest emergency room for immediate care. As you know, our podcast is about mental health. We know the topic in general is sensitive for many people, and it is a serious topic. For this episode in particular, we want to give you a content warning that we will discuss suicidal ideation and attempted suicide in this episode.
We also discuss the use of medication prescribed by mental health professionals. Again, we're speaking from our own personal experiences. We are not qualified mental health professionals. Please speak with your mental health professional if you're interested in learning more about whether or not medication is the right route for you and your well-being.
And if you're not comfortable with this content, you can either fast forward through the parts that we discuss the content that you're not comfortable with, or you can just join us for another episode.
Yes, we want you to take care of yourselves.
Go.
Welcome, Allie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're so excited.
You don't know.
Excited.
You have no idea. We have our first guest ever.
Thank you for being the guinea pig.
Oh, of course. I love it.
So I'm going to read a little bio about you because you're very impressive and people should know about it. All right. So Allie has a degree in chemical engineering from Cal State Long Beach. She has worked in the oil and gas and sustainable energy sector in multiple capacities, including in the oil field, sales, HR, and sustainable fuel. She has also been my best friend for 20 years.
Wow.
And is one of the key people I call when I'm panicking about life or work. She lives in Texas with her fiance and two cats, Harley and Augie. She enjoys reading, cross-stitching, learning German, traveling, and baking. Welcome, Allie.
Thank you. What a nice bio. Like, it's really interesting to hear everything kind of just compressed into one bio, but that's a great one. Thank you so much.
It was
you
easy.
Did it. You did it.
Yeah.
So Allie, it's so nice to meet you. And yes, your resume is so impressive. And then I think about, you know, what exactly was your mental health journey and what kind of tips do you have for us and our listeners, especially with regard to, you know, working, especially in the corporate arena?
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, the mental health journey is ongoing. It's something that you have to work on every day. And some days are really, really good and I feel really strong, and other days not so much. But in those points of weakness and those times where I feel almost like I'm slipping, I really just like, I mean, it's just breathing exercises. I love yoga. It's one of, you know, the things that I enjoy the most in exercise, and I don't like to exercise very much. So this is the one thing I really like, but, the box breathing, that always has helped me, especially in moments at work. So, it's very easy just to do in a meeting. But also if I need to step away, just run to the bathroom and just take a moment to do some box breaths. So in case any of your listeners aren't familiar with that, it is, a 4 to 5 second inhale and you hold for 4 seconds, exhale 4 seconds, hold 4 seconds. And it's this box breathing that just slows things down, calms the mind. You're really focused more on the breathing than all the other things that are happening in that moment. And so just brings it really in to be present in your breathing.
And, can we try it?
Yeah, I think that would be a great idea.
Okay, cool. All right. You want to lead us in it?
Of course, that would be great. Okay, so just nice, comfortable position. I like to close my eyes just so that I can be internalized. So we're going to breathe in for 1, 2, 3. Hold. 1, 2, 3. Exhale. 1, 2, 3. Hold. 1, 2, 3. You can continue to do this in any length of time that you need to slow and calm your feelings and your mind down and bring it inside just to be in the moment and slow things down.
Feels good.
Yeah,
it does.
I love that you can do it kind of without other people seeing it. Like you said, if you're on a Zoom meeting, nobody can tell that you've changed your breath.
Right.
Yeah. So
I mean,
it's very
with your eyes open.
Yeah. Yeah. Eyes open, but you know, you can at least, you know, mute and just kind of, okay, I'm going to take a second and just want, you know, it makes it a little bit easier to, you know, step out of the moment when I can feel emotions rising, whatever right. those may be. And, you know, and kind of just recenter. So, yeah.
Thank you for that.
Of course.
That's a great tip. I love it. Easily applicable. Well, when we come back from break, we'll ask you and we'll find more about Allie's mental health journey.
Yeah.
All right. See you soon. Welcome back, everyone. We're here with Allie, our special guest, our first guest. And Jocelyn, take it away.
Yeah. So, Allie, I obviously such an impressive resume you have. And so I think, I mean, obviously the question I want to ask you is what is your mental health journey? Because we know it's a present thing that's always happening. And more or less, I'm asking this question, not necessarily like, don't tell me what happened when you were two. But if when you were two is when you realized you had anxiety, or, you know, you realized that you could take the power back into your hands. I just want to know, when was that moment that you realized, like, not only do I have something that I'm battling mentally, but I have the power to do something about it. And what kind of prompted that?
Yeah. I know maybe not going back to when I'm two, I'm still going to give a little bit of background from when I was really little. So I started counseling, like school counselor and therapy when I was in kindergarten. My mom had a background in psychology, so she got her degree in psychology. And so she was always very open about speaking our emotions and how we felt. My dad, not so much. He's much more closed off. And I think after they divorced when I was three, she kind of led the way for us, my two older sisters and myself, to kind of open up and be more in tune with our feelings. So I started therapy really, really young. Honestly, I mean, in kindergarten I went because he had animal crackers, but you know, as things go along, you kind of learn more skills and tools that you can use as you start feeling things, you engage with yourself. I'll say that I realized that I had a mental health challenge, I'll say, when I was in high school. I mean, high school is really tough. It's very emotional and hormonal, but I became suicidal. So I felt really lost, and I didn't really feel like I had a place within, you know, the friends that I had been making along the way in high school. And I was very much I want to be friends with everyone. So I was friends with a lot of people, but not really solid, and didn't really have anyone I felt I could reach out to. And even though I had that bond with my mom, I was trying to figure out my own independence at that age. And so going through that and deciding, you know, I just didn't want to feel how I was feeling. It wasn't, you know, it's easier to talk about it and think about it today, many years later, but to think about that time is just, I was just in so much pain. I just felt so lost and so painful that I just didn't want to feel it anymore. And I wanted to live. It's so weird to think about, but I wanted to live. I just was hurting. And, I'm so glad, you know, the events happened as they did. You know, my mom coming out and stopping me, and I, you know, made a phone call to my sister and, my oldest sister, and she, you know, shared her passion for me. And, you know, it was really an eye opener for me. And so from that point on, it was a battle. It was a struggle. You know, I didn't feel as much comfort in therapy. I felt, I was really just battling and rebelling against it. And so it took some time, but, I hit another point when I was, you know, in my mid-20s, where I just started feeling more anxious. So there's these feelings of perfectionism and wanting to excel and do really well. And, you know, college was a tough time for me. I didn't do very well my first year. I ended up failing out my first year and then had to reroute to go into a new university. Did I change majors? Did I stick with it? So it was, you know, that was a huge detour for me. And I felt like a failure, and that was a big learning. But, you know, pushing through those things, the anxiety of trying to excel in, you know, as on your own. So I moved away from home and trying to figure life out on your own, as a young adult. You know, it's tough. So, you know, I kind of felt those things, but once I graduated and I figured all those things out, I thought I had it all under control. I left Long Beach State, graduated, left, moved to Arkansas to work in the oil field, put myself in a very culturally different environment. You know, not just moving from California to Arkansas, but moving from the comfort of sleeping in my own bed every night to sleeping in a trailer with, you know, nine other guys. And
and let it, you know, be known, you were the only woman on
that
team.
Was my question. I was gonna ask that.
So the job that I had, you know, at the well site, there could be anywhere between, I don't know, maybe 10 to 20 people on site, but I was always just the only female. So, you know, and always kind of being aware of that. And, you know, luckily the guys that I worked with became a family. They were very protective. So kind of felt like a younger sister or, you know, just like a closer friend where I never felt at risk, but it was, you know, you're always just aware of it. So then after the oil field stint that I did, I'm like, okay, that lifestyle is just not for me. I left, went to Houston, and I wanted to stay in oil and gas, and I started working with a startup and, you know, and kind of going through these changes. It was really stressful working in a startup environment. You know, it's an office job, which was much better than being in the field, but, I think at that point, you know, all the stress, I ended up getting my first panic attack. So didn't really know what it was, couldn't really understand what was happening. I just knew I couldn't really breathe. And then being in that moment of, I can't breathe and I feel like I'm losing breath and what's going to happen? Am I going to die? You know, you have to spiral in that moment, which is also why I've found that this box breathing works really well for me, is to like catch your breath and slow down and, you know, be in that moment.
Did you get medical help when you had the panic attack? Did you go get medical help or did you find that out on your own?
Yeah, I actually just found out and I reached out to my mom, and just asked her, you know, I'm like, this thing happened. And I mean, I think, I don't know, but you know, what's going on? And she's like, it sounds like you had a panic attack. She advised to go speak to a professional. She's like, go talk to a therapist, you know, and just see what's going on there and, you know, dive a little deeper. My mom's always been really good about respecting, you know, not trying to therapize me, you know, as my mom. She, you know, she's like, I'm doing my mom role. And, you know, you can go and see someone who can help you, outside of that. She, you know, she's always there for me, but, she was always very good about, you know, trying to keep it so that I can seek therapy and counsel somewhere else. And she didn't, you know, she kind of kept her own mom role, but anyway. I did that. And I actually, that's a good point about medical, assistance. So when I felt suicidal, I got on antidepressants. That helped a lot. Helped a lot. I was on those for years. So after, you know, my, attempted suicide in high school,
Attempted. I didn't realize you had attempted. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry for not clarifying. Yeah. So, attempted suicide in my junior year of high school. I got on antidepressants that significantly helped me. I was on those for years, until maybe my third year of college. And, at that point I had already talked, I was in therapy, I chose to stay in therapy, and, you know, seek that help. And they had advised, you know, it sounds like you can wean off and just see how you feel. And if you start feeling those things again, you can get back on them. So I was familiar with getting on medication. The anxiety that came up, you know, I was, you know, feeling these things again. It's the kind of these similar feelings of like the lows, how dark it kind of feels, the loneliness. I got back on antidepressants, you know, just kind of low dose for the assistance. I truly believe that, there is a chemical imbalance. You know, you can't always just control it yourself. I'm going to do whatever I can to try and do that, but sometimes you just need the backup. You just need the help, and that's okay. And I took that. More recently, moving into my current job, which I've been at for 7 years, it's a more diversified chemical portfolio. And, when I started with them, you know, I feel like I'm a relatively ambitious person and really want to, I have a really strong urge to learn and I want to learn new things and try new projects and go out and do new things. And so I volunteered to do this customer relationship management program. So they're building this new program for the sales group that was meant to be shared globally in our company. Mm. So my job was to develop the software for the sales team while I'm still doing my sales job. Wow. So basically the idea was that I was only supposed to give 10% or 20% time to this, but that doesn't mean that the job it's 100% and 100%, you know,
right.
That's not how it works. So, ended up working double time. So about 80 to 100 hours a week. It got very, very stressful. And at this point I had just started dating my now fiance and I had a massive anxiety attack.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Big anxiety attack. And, you know, he's sitting there unfamiliar with what's going on and thinking, oh my God, this person's going to die. Like, I don't know what to do.
Wow.
And he handled it like a champ. He was very supportive. He's like, just take a second. Like, let's just breathe, you know, like just breathe, you know, like let's just take one moment at a time. And, that was very early in our relationship. Like,
wow. That's amazing though, that you made it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of things that you're saying, Allie, that I'm just like, I'm so glad you're saying this, because I think, you know, the whole idea of this podcast is to understand that everyone's journey is different. Everyone's exposure and understanding of mental health is different, and that you can still live a very fulfilling life. You know, even though it could be a daily struggle. So I love this story, but continue, please.
Oh. Okay. You know, thanks.
Oh, I just wanted to say, I was like, I love that the Band-Aid just got ripped off with your fiance. Like, it wasn't necessarily a choice. It was just like, here I am. Yeah. I don't have a choice. I probably didn't want to share this side of me with you this early on, but it's happening. And you know what? He stood by you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is so nice.
I will say, I mean, you're thinking of all these things in the moment too, like,
right?
You're freaking out and like, mm-hmm. which makes you freak out even more. And then like, I'm not breathing. It's like, oh my God, I'm not breathing. Yeah. Like, oh God, this is just not how I wanted it to happen. Yeah.
I'm laughing out of recognition. It's like,
yeah, absolutely. I'm glad we can laugh about it now, right? Like, that's a way to laugh about it.
Yes. There's a lot to be grateful for afterwards, but Jesus, you're going through it. It's like, stupid body. No. Why did you do this?
I know. I was like, why aren't you on my schedule? This isn't like, you were supposed to expose this 6 months in, not three. Like, what are you doing?
Hilarious. Yeah, this is not on the timeline, not on the agenda.
Mm. Yeah.
I didn't
do this when I get home.
Yeah.
From this date.
Exactly. So, yeah. So basically from that point, I mean, that was a really big one for me. That anxiety attack was a big one. And so, I decided to get back on anti-anxiety medication, which I do want to share. I think it's important to share is that I was assigned through my work benefits program. So the employee assistance program. I was assigned a psychiatrist who I never really met and just prescribed me medication. Whoa. And this happens frequently. Not all psychiatrists do this, but he prescribed me medication through this office. I felt at that time, I was like, I need the assistance. And I don't want to say necessarily desperate, but I knew I needed to get on something quickly to help me with my work situation. You know, I was in a very stressful situation. So I get on this anti-anxiety medication. And now that I've experienced with what that feels like being on medication, I know what I'm looking for. I know the signs that how I feel when I'm on medication and if something's working for me or not. And luckily, I felt really confident and strong to be able to come back and tell him, I've been on this medication for a few weeks. It is not working. It's not the medication for me. I need something different. And in the consult, he's still not present in this office, but in the consult, he's like, no, I think this is the right thing for you. I'm like, you need to listen to me as the patient. I'm telling you what is what's going on, what isn't working. You need to try something different or give me a different dosage. So he's very adamant about it. And I've never been like that with a medical professional, but it was too important. And needless to say, I was very disappointed with that. I let our EAP group know him as a practitioner wasn't professional. He wasn't listening to patients. I met him once in the 4 or 5 times I had visited that office. And I then switched to a different psychologist and psychiatrist who then met with me face to face, and we could get on the right dosage and the right prescription. I then was on a very, very small doses of anxiety. So this also I thought was very interesting. I mean, I was on the tiniest pill that was split in half. So it was just tiniest amount. It ended up being like powder, but there's so much effect that those have that, you know, so it's something to be aware of too. If anyone's listening, trying to work through, you know, medications, they're strong. So, you know, to be aware that, you know, if it feels like it's too strong, then that's okay. You can, you know, maybe cut it down, which is what I needed to do. So, I got on that medication that really helped me get through that time in my life and got me back to, you know, post-stress. I also didn't realize this. If you're in a high stress environment, it chemically affects your brain and you end up getting into depression. So an after effect of anxiety and stress is depression, which I never knew. I never really correlated them. I just saw them as two separate emotions. So I got into a pretty deep depression after all of that. And the silver lining now is I've learned that about myself. I've learned the limits. And I know I can push myself really hard in my job, but know that if I start feeling that anxiety, nothing is worth going through that low. No job is worth
that
it.
That is so true.
I mean, yeah. So I'm glad that I had that lesson. I hate that I had to go through what I went through to learn it, but it's so important. And I'm glad that I have that lesson with me now. And even with the job I'm in now, it was it's, you know, really intense and it, you know, starts to get pretty stressful. I knew I just had to let them know I need to step away. I just need a moment. I need to step away. Things are getting too stressful and I just need a couple of days off. And, was able to do that. So I'm able to communicate it clearer. I'm able to stick up for myself too. That to me is the hardest thing with a job, especially a job, you know, or an environment that either doesn't understand mental health, doesn't speak about mental health openly. I think that's been such a great learning to just really be in my own corner. For my own mental health.
Do you feel like you've had to, that you are teaching your job how to manage a person who has a mental health thing, or did they already have this in place before you got there?
Oh, I really wish they had it in place.
Oh, so you're the trailblazer in some ways. I mean, which I think is important. Yeah. I think, for listeners out there who feel like no one's done this before, this is encouraging them to say, oh, I can look out for myself. I can advocate for myself at work. And you advocating for yourself, Allie, I'm sure there are people watching who you don't realize are watching who are like, if she can do it, I can do it.
No, that's a great point. And And that's, to me, like, you know, just jumping on here and speaking to the two of you, I'm completely open to talk about these things because they're so important. It needs to be addressed. I need it to be a topic where it's okay to just talk about. Like, why does it have to, you shouldn't feel ashamed about it. You shouldn't feel embarrassed not to speak up about it and just speak to people maybe you're comfortable with. But your work life is such a huge part of your life.
Yeah. It takes on so many hours of your day.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That it's hard not to address it. And for those that are very emotionally stable, I mean, bravo. That, I think that's great that you're able to do that. I've always been and wear my emotions on my sleeve flat out in front of you. Mm. Which I think makes it easier to know how I'm feeling, but also, you know how I feel. So, you know, I just, not everyone's the same. You can't fit in a cookie cutter. No. And you don't want that. You want the diversity. Right. So, you know, let's talk about it. Let's get out there and let's make it so that it's a regular topic. Like, hey, how's your mental health today?
Mm. And shout out to your mom. Like, your mom and your situation where your mom was able to be there. Cause I didn't have that. And, I know a lot of people who don't have that. And, you know, in my community, obviously I'm a Black woman. And my community, especially when I, you know, came out with my suicidal ideation to my family, I didn't even tell them that I was suicidal. Luckily, my sister, you said your sister was really helpful to you. One of my sisters, my younger sister, whose name is Ollie, your name is Allie. But Ollie's the reason why, I think when you're able to, and you hear your own voice, for me, I heard my own voice say that I wanted to commit suicide. Mm-hmm. That was when a light bulb went on for me. And I realized how serious it was, because you internalize these thoughts. For me, it wasn't even about, like, I remember when you said, you still wanted to live. I think I did still want to live. I think, and I've told people this in the past, the way my suicidal ideation was, it was more or less, I just wanted there to be like a period at the end of whatever was happening. And a lot of people are realizing, but did you understand it's a semicolon or it's a comma or something like that? Because something has to come after you attempt suicide. Mm-hmm. You have to now deal with life, or your people have to deal with death, you know, after that. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes a thing where you don't have the rationale or the ability to be able to think ahead of this period that you're putting at the end of this, you know, pain.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm feeling like that might've been what you felt. Now, luckily I never attempted suicide, but it was like, I tell people my everyday thing was like, Pinky in the Brain, where it was like every day I was thinking about how I'm going to be able to get out of here. Mm-hmm. Like that was my journey. Like, how am I going to get out of here, but then don't mess up someone else's life in the process, like my sister, or, you know, I don't want people to have to grieve me. And, you know, I didn't want people to feel like this was me trying to get special attention or that kind of thing. So, there were a lot of things that you said that I relate to. But I look at the fact that you had a mother that was open to discuss those things. It's just such a blessing to hear. And for the moms out there, moms need to know how important it is for, you know, you to make, create an environment for your kids to tell you the truth, about their mental health. So so many things I took back from that.
No,
Char, you've got anything?
I'm just brainstorming that, you know, maybe it would be great to have your mom on the podcast, because her story is also really fascinating. You know, we can edit this out if I'm not allowed to say it, but she worked for Child Protective Services for 20 years?
27, yeah.
27 years. You know, so I'd be curious to hear about how she managed that in terms of her mental health. And you were just last night telling me she worked three jobs at one point as a single mom with three kids.
Wow.
And
wow.
then went back to school to get her master's in psychology. So you come from a long line of like very impressive women. And, you know, even as a best friend, like it's just an honor to hear your story, told by you in this podcast. And, you strike me as a very confident, straightforward person. So to hear that, you know, even you had trouble speaking up to a medical professional, it's hard. But I think for those listeners who are considering therapy or considering talking to a psychologist, it's kind of like dating. You have to shop around for the right match.
That is so true.
And you have to be empowered. Some therapists do like consultations that are free, so you can ask them your questions and kind of get a sense of their vibe and whether you're vibing together. So it's okay to like start with one therapist and switch because it's not working.
Yeah.
So Ali, I think you're a great example of that. I'm glad. I'm really glad you brought it up.
Yeah, and especially the idea of medication too, because for me, I was able to get through. I mean, I did talk therapy and I never was had to be on medication. The psychiatrist that my therapist was going to set me up with, it just, he didn't have to, I guess, you know, he never got back to me. And so she kept reaching out to him. And in the process, though, I was still, you know, doing talk therapy. Because when I first started therapy, my therapist was like, I think you're unipolar, meaning crazy. I was just depressed, like really, really depressed. And after I started talking to her about my life, she goes, yeah, you're going through a lot. I don't know if I feel this way anymore. Like I hadn't talked to anyone for 29 years of feeling this way since I'm like 4, 5, 6 years old. So this is over 20 years of just stuffing. And then, you know, you can't heal overnight for something that you've been stuffing for 20 something years. So I do think everyone's journey is different. Everyone's experience with therapy obviously is going to be different. I was blessed. I met one therapist and she happened to be the best person for me. But I have suggested my therapist to other people and they've been like, I'm not into her. And I'm like, all good, move on. I thought she was great, but she wasn't great for everyone. And that is the reality. Even the therapist that works for you may not work for others. So I really, really appreciate that. And I think the importance of advocating not only for yourself at work, but advocating for your own medical help. And I think it's very, like, just so brave, to be honest with you. It's very brave of you to do that because
the sad truth is, like, I don't remember the statistics, but unfortunately, I've read that you have to say it multiple times in order to get heard. And we've seen that with like higher morbidity rates for Black mothers.
Oh my God,
in labor, right? They're not being listened to. And the sad fact is like when we need that help, a lot of times we have to say it like at least 3 times to even have a chance for them to respond. I'm like, it's hard enough for me to say it 1 time.
Right.
Now I have to repeat myself. And then on top of that, you run into racial bias, gender bias. It's like statistically proven that medical professionals don't listen to Black patients.
Don't respond.
If you do speak up, it doesn't always work, but we have to try.
And part of, like, you know what Ali was saying, the importance of just being able to be honest with the world around you. It started for me, obviously, being honest with my sister first, and for you, Ali, it looks like it was you being honest with your family too first. For me, that has helped me go into the rest of the world and be like, if you aren't here for me, I'm going to move on, like relationship wise. And there's not always going to be bosses that are going to care. There's not always supervisors that would care. But I did have this question, though, Allie, because are you managing other employees? Do you manage other employees? Okay, so you don't supervise specifically other people. Okay.
No.
At any point during your career, did you?
I did manage some folks for a little while in a couple different capacities. So actually a job that I had here in Orange County, but then also when I was in a job that I had in Houston. So two separate scenarios, but yeah, I don't currently though.
But when you did, how was it that you managed other, because the thing about working with other people, and this is whether you supervise them or not, you're managing other people's expectations. You're, as a person who's sensitive to mental health issues, you're also trying to manage their mental health too at the same time. And sometimes that incurs this idea of, and I was telling Charlotte this on text, like I am prone to be a lot more codependent. And because of that, I end up doing what's better for other people before I do what's best for myself. So did you notice any of that, you know, in your journey when you were supervising other people, or maybe when you're working with other people, you know, even if you have the same, you know, level?
Yeah. I'll speak to the more recent scenario. So the job that I had with the oil and gas chemical company, that startup company in Houston, I aspired to continue climbing the ladder, and I, you know, was in a technical role, thought that that's where I would be, more in the process engineering side of things for the company. But I had three different leaders suggest that I go into sales. And so at that point I said, fine, I'll bite the bullet. I'll go into sales. So I did some sales stuff for them and then ended up managing the team for a short period of time. That ended up being a group of gentlemen. So all men in the sales team who were older, myself, much more experienced. It was very interesting dynamic.
And listeners, if you could see Charlotte and my faces, our eyes are probably bigger than the screen.
All eyes are bulging out. Like, I'm just imagining their perspective of like this young woman coming in and being like, hi, I'm your new boss.
It was interesting. You know, and luckily, I mean, I had worked with these guys already for a couple of years and then ended up starting to manage them because the company was in disarray. It just wasn't organized. There was so much change happening. We needed a gathering. And these guys who had kind of, you know, cowboyed up and run on their own to do their own thing, to manage themselves, now to try and hone them in and to, or to rein them in and to put some organization in there from someone who's, for some of them were half their age. It was just,
that sounds really like crazy. A really rough task. That's like, did your company really set you up for success with this? Cause these guys are used to doing their own thing.
No, I think honestly it was, they knew they needed a change and I was up to the task. Like I basically had said, I realize the complications and the challenges that are ahead, but something has to happen. Here's my proposal for, you know, said things, and let's do something to move things forward. So, it was really challenging. So that just kind of setting up the scenario itself. So to go back to your question, no, I was not necessarily, I'm going to be honest, I was not really thinking about anyone's mental health.
How about your own? Were you thinking about yours?
I did question my sanity. But even going into that situation, that is something I did. But I liked the question that you asked too, because honestly, I kept trying to put myself in their shoes. I just kept thinking, if I am this guy and seeing someone younger with way less experience than I have, just the experience, who is this person to tell me what to do? And so mm-hmm. my approach with him wasn't necessarily friendly. I was literally just saying, I understand. I addressed it very directly. I understand that this is the scenario. My assumption and your perspective is you have much more experience, and we need that. I need mm-hmm, that experience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My job is just to organize us so that we're consistent, you know? Mm. They were not totally on board with that, but that's okay. You know, like, it's the lesson. So yeah, I mean, in that scenario of managing people, it was a really chaotic time for the company anyway. They ended up getting sold. So the company got bought out by a competitor, and it was totally, I will say probably 80 to 90% of the employees were laid off. Majority of the company ended up moving on to other things. Mm-hmm. So it was already a really challenging time. Everyone was already nervous and concerned, and there was some issues. So, I mean, I put myself into a really tough situation on my own, So since then I was like, I am okay. I actually left that company saying, I do not want to manage people.
Yeah, I was wondering that, because I'm thinking, oh my God, if she manages people and her life and all these things, that's tough. So mm-hmm. what do you do outside of work that makes you, like, gives you a better, would you say that you have a good work-life balance? And if you do or do not, if you do, what is it that you do? If you don't, do you wish what do you wish that it looks like?
This is the big million-dollar question, I think. You know, everybody is striving for this work-life balance, right? And everyone is different. So it's every individual. There's mm-hmm. some who find that their life balance is in the success they have with work, you know, and that can be
that's
a scenario.
So true.
But some also feel, you know, there has to be a balance in, you know, my personal hobbies and the things I enjoy outside of the work stuff. And, mm-hmm. You know, many people have families, you know, so it's interesting. I can say this is still something I'm working on.
Same.
So
it's ongoing, right? It's like, even in the times where I have felt it, then something else changes.
Yeah.
And so it's like these phases, this fluidity. Mm. I did just want to say that one thing, Allie, I've always admired about you. Like you said, you're very curious. You've always had interesting hobbies, whether it's like, I want to learn how to do calligraphy. I'm cross stitching, right? I left that out of your bio, but Allie does know how to do calligraphy. Like, you always are like, you're always making time to learn new things outside of work that enrich your life. And, you know, that's fascinating to me, because growing up as a dancer, my hobby then became my job when I became a dance teacher. And someone would ask me, like, do you have any hobbies? I'd be like, what's a hobby? I don't understand. What do you mean? And so finding that, I think, whether you feel the balance or not, I see that effort on your part through your hobbies.
No, thanks. That's actually a good point. I forgot about the calligraphy.
Yeah, I didn't.
No, you know, actually, when you're listing those items too, you know, my degree and the job that I do are very, you know, science or technical focused. I get to kind of work a lot more on, I hope I say this right, but the left brain stuff. So the really analytical things. So when I go to any like rest or hobbies or anything to find a balance in my life, I try to go into the more creative artistic space. So, you know, I used to paint a lot in high school. So painting was a huge outlet for me. you know, and then I did pottery for a little while. And then, you know, Charlotte mentioned cross stitching. So thanks to my friend Katie for teaching me that. It's something that is my COVID hobby that I picked up.
Oh, wow.
And I really love it. It's very calming and monotonous. Like I don't have to use my brain for anything. It's a very good mental break. So yeah, I get to kind of use more of the creative side, and that makes me feel more balanced in that sense. But work is crazy. The space that I'm in right now is developing. So the industry is new, and there's a lot of learning, which I love to do. But it's high intensity. There's a lot of urgency. So it was kind of very fast paced for about, I'll say, 6 to 8 months. And then now it's a little bit slower. So, you know, to me, that's kind of a massive balance. So 8 months of intensity and now, you know, 4 months of calm. So I'm allowing myself, you know, I find that my success is in the products I put out, you know, what I can provide to the company. So I'm allowing myself to be in this moment and have this learning of it's okay to be in the calm. It's okay to have nothing, you know, going on for a day and to just be in the silence and the slow, because things will ebbs and flows, right? So it'll pick back up. It'll get crazy and hectic. And then I can reflect back and say, I had this moment of calm and peace, and, you know, that calm and peace will come back, you know, as the learning. And so, I found that, you know, that kind of, for me, is the balance, the day-to-day balance. Still working on that.
No, I mean, I think that's more, I mean, obviously you're being honest, and I think that is, we always, I think, as human beings, especially in the kind of culture that we work in, which is so, we have such a strong idea of like grind. And I don't have a balance either, but I appreciate the fact that you were saying sometimes your work itself gives you a certain amount of contentment. And I work with students. I love my students. It's exhausting. It's mentally challenging. I feel like sometimes I can't get into the creative part of my brain because I'm still trying to analyze, what do I do to support the student? What's a different thing that I can learn to be better at my job? So sometimes even I'll spend time outside of my job trying to figure out stuff for my job, you know, but I don't know if I think that that's unhealthy. In some ways, I think then when I'm on the job, I'm able to, you know, quickly be able to adjust to whatever I need to adjust to or give the answers that I need to give. So I don't know if there, and, you know, you've answered the question perfectly. There isn't an answer necessarily for people. There isn't a balance. I just think we have to check in and say, am I okay when I'm not at work? I think that's the question I have to ask myself, is like, are we okay? Like, am I sleeping too much? Am I not sleeping enough? That's the way I see, you know, is my apartment way too dirty? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's how I gauge my mental health, is these ideas of like what I let go of because I'm trying to do stuff for work, you know? So
dishes is always the first thing, always my first cue. When the dishes are piled up and I don't get to them, I'm like, okay, that's my first cue. Like, I need to slow down, or I need to, and sometimes I still don't. And then the laundry piles up.
Same.
And then, I mean, it's something Jocelyn and I have kind of talked about, like, when do you catch yourself, or can you catch yourself before you spin out? You know, with the box breathing, that's something I would try to do before I'm a goner, meaning before I've escalated. So that's a great tip to switch it. But something I've talked about with my therapist, or what are my own cues that I'm starting not to be okay? And for me, it's shuffling my papers on my desk. When I'm like shuffling my papers, that's me like trying to find information in my notes and I can't find it. And then I'm pulling out all these files and the shuffling is like, okay, Char, you need to stand up and walk away. You need to go walk the dog.
That is really good self-awareness.
Yeah. Well, I have to learn it. It started as a teacher lesson planning because I'd be like, where's that lesson? And where's that material? And I'd go through all my binders because I'm a hard copy person. And I was trying to look for a sense of control. And I was like, the shuffling is my first cue. But I think it's interesting too, Allie, that like what the way you framed the balance was like switching tasks, like switching parts of the brain. Like Jocelyn talked about thinking about work outside of work as teachers, as educators. I think pretty much all of us do that. I can only speak about educators. I can't, but probably like, you know, we're all kind of trying to problem solve when we step away from work, but like, when Allie was like, cross-stitching, shut the brain off, enter a different mode. There's a balance in that. So I think that's helping me think about how do I switch the modes when work is actually done? It's not bad to think about work and reflect on it. I don't want it, that to be a source of shame for myself, but I do want to be able to switch modes. When I'm
and even switching the mode, like Allie, you were saying, you switched the mode of like, oh, it's really crazy right now, but it wasn't crazy a couple of months ago and I'll get it again. That's a switch too. Like just visualizing yourself and remembering that this is just in this moment in your timeline. It's not forever.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's also too important to remember, I mean, our brain is a muscle. So you wouldn't go to the gym and work out a muscle all day long. You know, you would give it a rest, you know, you'd give it a break. So whatever that is, it deserves a rest. And it's a muscle that's constantly working, right? But
anyway,
Yeah. But if you just give it a moment to rest, and honestly, for me, you know, Char, I think you and I have talked about this frequently. We're like, I just need to turn my brain off. I need to watch like a dumb show, like a mindless show.
That's one of my strategies. That's one of my when I'm starting to spin out, I like 5 years ago, my therapist and I were like, if there's no other way to shut off the brain, calling friends isn't helping because you can't listen to them anyway. Nobody's going to say the right thing to you right now. You turn on the TV.
Yeah.
That's a strategy for me. It doesn't mean I'm never going to think about it again. It doesn't mean I'm going to be in denial, but it means I need to shut off the brain in that moment because I'm just spinning.
Just it's just a break to not think about that topic for an hour. I mean, I have a tendency to binge, but you know, for like an hour at least for healthy TV viewers.
A reset. Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm taking whatever tools I can get wherever I can get them. And for me, you know, Joss and I have talked a little bit about sleeping. It's something we want to get, like, maybe do an episode on. It's like, how do you sleep when you have anxiety? Or like, how do you not sleep when you have depression? You know, for me, when I'm depressed, I sleep so much. And when I'm anxious, I don't sleep. So it's like, I'm in bed and I'm thinking of all the tasks that I had to have to do. How do I turn that off? Well, recently I've been putting on a meditation to fall asleep because I just need to stop.
And I'm just grateful for all the tools that now exist. On the very phone that could be very problematic. You know what I'm saying? But there's so many now tools that we can use that maybe we didn't know about, or maybe they weren't at, you know, on our fingertips, you know, in the past. And again, these conversations, even Allie, the things you're speaking about are things like, I didn't think about that. Yeah, pick up another, you know, kind of mindless thing to do that where you're actually doing something, because, you know, cross-stitch, you're doing something. You're going to have something at the end. You're going to say, I didn't just veg out and do nothing. Mm-hmm. You see that during that time you were being very...
And she gifted me one, so I'll put up a picture of the one me in our socials, because it's a large piece, so I'm sure it took a lot of hours, but it's also very funny.
Wow.
A funny cross stitch.
Yeah. I think it's important that we just take, you know, a moment. And for me, all I think about is we're learning, we're continuing to develop, and to have all these tools in our toolbox. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can hit a point where just like, I don't have these tools. So to kind of go back to what we talked to before, this is why it's so important to talk to other people and to have these conversations, because their tools are different.
Thank you.
It's like, I needed a hammer. Like, thanks. Mm-hmm. Can I borrow that? Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just, you know, to have these conversations and to learn from each other. And like you said, okay, mm-hmm. just like the therapist, you try it on, you try the dress on, it's not really my thing. I'm gonna try a different one. And having those tools and talking to these people, you know, whatever it may be, it's just gonna give you more opportunities to manage it yourself when you're alone. Mm-hmm. You know, you may not have a friend that you can call at any given moment. You know, maybe it's at 3:00 in the morning. You know, I don't want to wake anyone up. I don't want to bother, you know, my partner who's laying right next to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how do I manage this right now? Okay. Mm. Like, you know, and the more we practice it, the more we talk about it, it becomes so just natural.
Yeah, it's normalized.
Mm-hmm.
And less mm-hmm. alone.
Yeah.
You know, feeling less alone. Like, you know, we started out with your resume. It's super impressive. Maybe no one would have guessed that you've been through the pain that you have,
mm-hmm.
you know, but mm-hmm. you have, and you continue to want to learn, and you continue to drive yourself forward. It's something that I really admire about you, as well as your authenticity and mm-hmm. how honest you are about where you're at. It's a real gift.
And it's a blessing to us. It's a blessing to us and our listeners to be able to see that, you can have a mile long, very important resume, and mental health was part of that. And we don't mention that in there. And she not only, I mean, to me, it makes you more of a badass, because we're like, oh, you did all that and you had all those issues. I wish people, I mean, honestly, people need to know that. Like, I mean, people that are the most, you know, successful, or, you know, I guess in terms of, I hate the word success in that way, because it can be defined in so many different ways. The career success or whatever. Yeah. And that person has to manage, like, how do I manage the anxiety that comes from all those deadlines that I had to meet?
And for me this week, I didn't. This week at work, I didn't manage it.
And it happens.
But you know who I called? I called Allie.
I'm so glad I could be there.
I am too.
Calling Allie. I'm just going, Allie, this is what happened today.
And Allie actually, you know, when we do talk about our mental health issues, just like Allie said, we're gathering tools, because I explained the situation to her, and she was like, first of all, it sounds like you entered a really, you know, high intensity situation right off the bat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's not slow season. And then second of all, you know, they don't know you yet. They don't know what you're good at. They don't know where you're going to thrive. So you need to tell them, like, this kind of task, you know, you're not going to get the best work from me, but this kind of task, I can really, like, multiply our assets, and I can really contribute here. So where can we find a place where I can be the most helpful? And I honestly wouldn't have thought of that. Mm-hmm. And then I talked about with my therapist, she basically said the same thing. So good job, Al. I drafted an email to the boss, and I got relief when I
can imagine that
to the boss.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you do, if you are able to reach out, they might, you know, Allie even texted me the wording. So I was like, I'm not going to remember this conversation, because when I'm anxious, there's so much adrenaline, I can't remember anything. Hmm. So she texted me the wording. I wrote out the draft with my therapist the next day during our session.
Wow.
And only after I sent it, you know, kind of speaking up, advocating for myself, did I have some sort of relief. But in general, I wasn't able to do all those tips we've already discussed because I forgot I had them.
Yeah.
And then a friend reminds you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to have that network.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Your mental health network. Network. Yep.
Yeah. Net that catches you.
Yes.
Your net is there, like you're on the trapeze, and your net is your people and your resources and your professionals and your learning that catches you. And we need that.
Yeah.
Well, Allie, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, of course.
I mean, I'm your biggest fan, but I'm sure you'll have many more fans after this.
I'm a fan now.
Oh, thanks, Joss. No, I'm so glad to have been here. I really truly believe in what the two of you are doing. I'm so glad that you are doing this. It's so important. And thank you for opening it up. You're opening up a wider net for those that don't have those people.
That just gave me goosebumps.
That did too for me.
A wider net. Yeah. I like that.
It means a lot. It means a lot.
Thank you so much. Al.
Thank you. I can't wait to hear all your next guests.
And yeah, maybe your mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I just like listen in while you're doing it? Because I just.
Yeah.
Well, she's that. Also a who. Your mom's a who.
She's also very honest.
Yeah, I love that.
That's what we want here. That's what we need. Mm. Honesty is so important.
Yeah, she's also a badass. Yeah. Runs in the family.
It's the DNA.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Had
love
such a great
time.
So
thank
love
you. Thank you.
Thanks for being all right. Here.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Welcome back, listeners. How amazing is Allie?
I loved her. I thought she was amazing. She's going to be my new friend.
Yes, she's such a gift in my life. And actually, we just asked her to be the godmother for our baby. So I am pregnant, and she said yes to being the godmother. So
what a lucky baby.
Very lucky. She's a keeper. Making sure she's going to be in baby's life. So listeners, we just want to do a quick recap, offer some resources on some of the topics we talked about. I know suicide came up in the conversation today. So Joss, what's a resource if someone's feeling suicidal?
Yeah, if you're feeling suicidal, whether you're in crisis or not in crisis, I want people to understand the way that you can find some resources and, you know, speak to someone immediately. You can either text if you want to do chatting. You can text the number 988, or you can call on your phone 988, and that will connect you with a mental health practitioner who is really trained to manage someone who's in crisis. But even if you aren't in crisis, it's a wonderful way for you to be able to talk to someone and get some help. Also, you know, during Allie's interview, she was talking about, she works in a corporate, you know, setting, but I work in private sectors, so I don't know, you know, what the acronym is for some people if you're working. A lot of companies do invest in mental health there's a mental health, I guess, I don't know how to describe it, but a third party who helps employees with that. In my company, they call it EASE or whatever, but it's the Employee Assistance Program. I highly suggest go to your HR department and ask, do we have these services available for us? Oftentimes it gives you some free sessions with a therapist. I did at the very beginning of my mental health journey, and this is, I realized this when Allie was talking, because I remembered seeing, it was only a one session with this person, and I was dealing with a family issue, and my boss happened to say, hey, you know, they have this program, and I was able to get someone, talk to someone, I think that day. And then meet in person with that person. So it was a really great thing. So Allie talked about that. That's another tip.
She called it
mental health stuff.
Her
EAP.
EAP, Employee Assistance Program. And you're saying at your job, it's called something different, but they're both, So you might have to find out from your HR representative, like Joss said, like you can ask your HR representative, do we have something in place to support mental health within the company already? And for those of us like me who don't have insurance through our jobs, the therapists that I've, you know, decided to work with, who I knew were the right fit, have always been people who don't take my insurance. You know, but I know they're the right fit for me. So the question I've asked is, do you ever see patients on a sliding scale? Which means they can, they're not going to charge you their full rate. It might be half the rate. It might be what you can afford. So the first question, if they're like, we don't take insurance, you can say, do you ever see patients on a sliding scale? They'll either say yes or no. I've been asked, what can you afford? So then I name the price, or they might tell you their set price for a sliding scale. So that's another option for pursuing mental health resources if it's not an option through health insurance and through your company.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great idea. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure. Yes. Well, thank you so much, listeners. If you have any questions for Allie or for us, or something with Allie's story really resonated, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us. You can tell us about your mental health journeys. We want to engage with you and hear about your stories as well, because as we said with Allie, we're collecting tools.
We are.
The more
gathering
the merrier.
Tools.
Yeah, we're gathering tools, and we're trying to expand this net. And thank you so much for tuning in.
Hope you have a great week.
Yes.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Go.
Hi, listeners. This is Joss from Two Ladies Just Talking About Mental Health. I want to remind you that if you are experiencing a mental health crisis, please call or text 988 or go to the nearest emergency room for immediate care. And maybe you're not in crisis, but you need a therapist to help you on a more frequent basis, but you're concerned about the cost. Here's a tip. When you're reaching out for therapists, be sure to ask them if they offer their services on a sliding scale, meaning that they can lower their rate to better accommodate your financial situation. And if you're looking for a therapist who specializes in working with minority identities, there are collectives and organizations out there that have you covered too. Here's a couple of those resources. For Black women or girls, therapyforblackgirls.com. If you're looking for a therapist of color, you can go to nopsych.com. That's nopsych.com. For South Asian therapists, there's southasiantherapist.org. And for LGBTQ plus identities, the National Queer and Trans Therapists of Color Network, which is nqttcn.com. If you are parenting as an LGBTQ plus person, rainbowfamilies.org. Again, when you contact a therapist, please ask, do they offer their services on a sliding scale? That will help reduce your financial burden. Blessings to you and your search. May you find a therapist that meets your needs.